how exactly did you make the connection between an Indonesian volcano and Baby Saguaro?
Well, it's quite funny. I had published a paper on the relationship between saguaro regeneration and El Nino, which, of course, is much closer to home for us in Arizona. And as one of the classes that I teach, which is a natural disasters class, I lectured every year, twice a year or so, on Krakatoa and the eruption in 1883. And so whenever I'd go back and look at that data set, I'd always notice that there was a spike right around 1883, and I was always very curious about it. And eventually, one thing led to another, and I conversed with my co-author on the original paper that talked about El Nino, and it turns out that El Nino and volcanism is also related, so it was a whole sort of can of worms. But eventually, we started wondering if there could be a relationship there, and we went from there. But it was really the random luck of teaching a natural disasters class that 1883 date was actually in my head when I'm looking at these databases.
So it's a spike in specifically what?
So what happens is that when the volcano erupts, you have all sorts of particulates and aerosols and other things that are entering into the atmosphere. Now, we know that these impacts are global, even casually. I mean, people recognized after Pinatubo erupted that there were red sunsets for many years, even in places that were not near the Philippines. So we know that this material is left in the atmosphere for a year, 2 years or so. And we know that that's the case, but no one's ever actually looked at the effect of that locally. And so I went out and I said, okay, well, I'm getting this spike around Krakatoa. I wonder if there could be other things. And so we know that there's an impact on, for example, our sunsets. Well, it turns out that, you know, these adjustments in the atmosphere, these temporary changes associated with this material that's been erupted, also impacts climate, and it affects climate in the short term, you know, about the same time period as sort of that effect, a year, 2 years, something like that. And so you have these small changes in the climate. And saguaros are very, very temperamental when they're young. When they're large, they're pretty hardy and they can tolerate a lot. But when they're very small, you know, after a year of life, they may only be, you know, 2 or 3 millimeters tall. So really, really small. And so small changes in the environment can really be important at that stage in their life. And it turns out that those eruptions are actually causing enough change in that 1 or 2 year really young stage for them that it actually can be the difference between life and death.
So give me an idea of the scale of this volcano.
Krakatoa is one volcano, but it's interesting that in the late 1800s and early 1900s, there were quite a few really large volcanic eruptions. And, you know, you'd have to go to a geologist to figure out why that is. But whatever the reason, there was sort of a cluster of these events. And it turns out that there are a lot of regeneration peaks around the turn of the century as well. So it's not just one eruption. It's many eruptions in that period. And there's certainly a spike in that 1883 date around the eruption of Krakatoa. So you have this eruption. You have all this stuff go into the atmosphere. And then you have you know, very mild climate change, and then you have these conditions that make it better.
So we're not just looking at the effects of one volcano in Indonesia affecting the saguaros in Arizona. You're looking at an entire generation of volcanoes going off in order to impact these cacti.
That's true, but realistically, the effect of any given eruption is probably only a couple, 3 years until it starts to really wane. So what it is it's not so much an accumulation from one eruption to the next as it is, you know, if there were 8 eruptions and you just have a lot of spikes and peaks in regeneration during that period. So I have a spike in 1883 and then it sort of dropped off for a few years and then it went up again with the eruption of the next volcano. So it actually is volcano specific, but you just have that sort of cluster of success around the turn of the century because there was just one eruption after the next. So I found a direct link between the eruption itself and the particulates with the regeneration, you know, in populations that I was studying. In fact, one of the clearest examples of a marginal population near the Kofa National Wildlife Refuge, which is just up the road there from Yuma. And, you know, if I looked at that population and there are clear spikes in 1883 and in these other years. And so it is almost at an individual level, but the scale is very global.
So give me an idea here, hypothetically speaking, what do you think the saguaro population would look like today if it weren't for these spikes?
Well, that's highly hypothetical, but certainly, one thing that has really excited me when I've gone out to the field. You know, when you're in the field, you kind of on field mode, you're on I'm collecting data mode, and you go and you sample your first plant, and then you measure your what you want for the second plant, and you go through plant by plant. But after I finished this project, I realized that this period of time, the plants at COFA would have been between about 3.5 and 4 meters tall. And it's amazing to stand out there when you go back afterwards and you realize an incredible, incredible number of the plants there really do fall in that 3.5, 4 meter or so tall range at COFA, dating back to around the turn of the century, with the slightly taller ones probably being the Krakatoa plants. And it's amazing to stand there and realize that. And then you say to yourself, okay, what if all these weren't here, or many fewer of them were here? And you just realize that a huge portion of the population, in fact, would be missing. You go to COFA and you stand there and you go, wow, this is a cool desert scene, but you don't realize, wow, this cool desert scene came about because Krakatoa erupted in 1883, and Mount Pelée erupted in Martinique in 1903, and there are all these other eruptions. And that's why the cactus are there. You know, it's certainly a major contributing factor to it. So it's just amazing to stand there and just realize that, you know, this volcano erupted on the other side of the planet more than 100 years ago, and that's why you've got these magnificent plants in, you know, just north of Yuma at the COFA National Wildlife Refuge.
What do you think should be done today? Because I know that there is a lot of concern over the future of saguaros.
Yeah. The future of the species is something that there's a lot of disagreement about. There's historically been the famous necrotic disease scare and the bacterial necrosis, and that was really founded on, unfortunately, on a lot of bad science. And so there was, a lot of what happened there was not related to any sort of, horrible insect vector or anything like that. So a lot of that stuff, unfortunately, was not well founded. But in the modern, we know that I don't think the issue is so much to protect saguaros in particular as it is sort of a greater problem. So, for example, there's climate change and things going on that are, for example, allowing buffle grass to establish, and that can outcompete saguaros locally. And so there are sort of these bigger picture issues. Saguaros themselves are actually very, very large in number, and there are so many populations that haven't been studied that we don't even know how many there are. If you were to ask me what seems like a simple question, like how many saguaros are there in the wild, I couldn't give you an answer. We don't know, because there are, in fact, so many, certainly if you include the Mexican portion of their range, which is more than half of their range, there are many, many individuals. But the bigger questions are things like, okay, if they range northward with warming climate, what's going to happen to their range? Is it going to get larger? Is it potentially going to get smaller? And then these other complications like, okay, well, even if they can survive, are their pollinators going to survive? Are the plants, are the species and the animals that disperse their seeds going to survive? So they also integrate with other species in the ecosystem, which may not necessarily move with them. So there are a lot of these sort of bigger picture issues that are of concern. And I think that's where a lot of the efforts should be focused in terms of research and trying to figure out what to do. I mean, if I go to COFA, I don't think there's much to do other than discouraging people from cutting them down or cutting down their nurse plants or anything like that. But I think there are these sort of bigger issues that are going to come about with continued warming.
What do you think the absolute overarching big picture is when it comes to the growth of saguaros?
Well, saguaro regeneration is almost entirely hindered or allowed by their survival in the first few years. The mortality is essentially 100%. I mean, it's 99.999. There are a few nines after the decimal point. It's basically 100%. There are many years where you don't have any establishment at all, despite the production of a seemingly infinite number of seeds. And it's all driven by climate as well as by local factors, animals that dig up seeds and things like that. And so once these individuals reach, several years of age, their odds of survival are much higher, and they'll produce many, many fruits and flowers and seeds. And so I think that that, again, the issues have to do more with what's going on at youth. And that's part of why this volcanism study was so cool, because the effects of a volcano may only last 1 or 2 years. But in fact, that's exactly the critical window for saguaros. Once those effects fade, the plant is likely already past the critical stage and can probably now survive with more adverse conditions or going back to normal conditions.
So what you're saying is that in a way, this is a lesson on the, not the delicacy, but rather the sensitivity of the environment to the climate.
Absolutely. And those changes are, you know, they're real. And as climate change proceeds and continues and escalates, again, the issue I don't think will be so much about this one plant or this one population. I think it'll be about what happens if the saguaro shifts north in its range and the environment isn't suitable, or its pollinators aren't there, or it's moving into an environment with an intense competitor like buffle grass or something else where it can't survive. So even if the climate, even if it can shift into a better climate, it may not have the rest of the ecosystem that it's evolved with there with it to help maintain the populations that can potentially or maybe not establish. And it is kind of a big picture issue. As I said, there are many, many saguaros in the wild, but that doesn't mean that there isn't cause for concern. Again, with changing conditions, there are a lot of different things that can happen. No one's ever resolved really the fate of the saguaro. There was one study done several years ago where someone looked at rain shifts and they said, oh, well, it's going to shift north. But they didn't consider things like, you know, pollinators and all these other species that provide services. And they also didn't consider the Mexican portion of their range. They just left it out. So we actually have no idea if the range is potentially going to get larger. I mean, maybe it'll be successful, right? We don't know. Maybe it'll get smaller. We don't know, but if you mix up the ecosystem so that you're linking it with other species, then we don't really know what's going to happen. I mean, the saguaro requires nurse plants to modify its climate locally. I know some saguaro enthusiasts are surely well aware of that. They don't establish in the open. They only establish under other plants or occasionally rocks. And thankfully, we're happy to say saguaros aren't that picky. They seem to do pretty well under many different species. But still, you know, again, with changing environments and changing climates, a lot of things could happen with even that kind of relationship with other species.